passage. Obviously, a dramatic change of circumstance for Saul as he encountered Jesus, but also Ananias and the impact that it had on him. And we've seen earlier in Acts that Saul was the main person responsible for persecuting the church. And he was doing it with a passion. It had become his obsession. He wanted to make sure that the church wasn't going to flourish. As we saw a few weeks ago, he was there when Stephen, the first martyr, was stoned to death. And as some commentators think, he was actually in charge of that event. And now we see he's making murderous threats against the church and wants to go further. He asked the high priest for letters. When people have a passion, when they have an obsession, there seems to be no stopping them. They, you know, you almost think they'll be satisfied at one point, but there's always more. They always want more. And Saul just seemed to want more. And he decided to go, wanted to go to Damascus and take any followers of the way, as it says in our reading, and put them in prison. The way, a term used for the early Christians, really drawing on the fact that Jesus had said that he was the way to God. John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And this wasn't any small journey. Damascus was about 150 miles from Jerusalem. So he wanted to set off and do that. It would have taken him about 2 weeks to get there. We complain when we get held up for a couple of hours on the motorway. But it would have taken him about 2 weeks to get to Damascus. Damascus is actually considered to be the oldest capital in the world and one of the oldest continually inhabited cities in the world. First inhabited, they reckon, about 3000 BC. Today it has a population of over 2 million, and because of the war that's been going on in Syria, it was voted in 2019 as the least livable city out of 140 that were looked at. And at the time of Saul, it was an important cultural and commercial centre by virtue of its geographical position at the crossroads of the Orient between the Africa and Asia. And it was here that Saul wanted to go. He probably saw it as a significant strategic city that he wanted to go and sort out. And Paul headed there to deal with the people of the way. And it was as he approached Damascus, so almost 2 weeks into his journey, he'd almost got to Damascus, that he meets Jesus. People meet Jesus in many ways. You've no doubt heard very dramatic testimonies of people whose lives have been turned around by an incident that's happened, a meeting with Jesus. Some people, their relationship with Jesus seems to develop and grow. But there becomes a point for each one of us when we have to acknowledge Jesus as our Lord and Saviour, when we have to realise what he has done. So you may not have had a conversion of coming to Jesus as dramatic as Saul's, but they're all vital and all important. And here we see that there was a sudden light from heaven and a flash all around. Whether it startled him, that it knocked him off his horse, whether his horse reared or whatever, but he falls to the ground. And as he fell to the ground, there was a voice from heaven. And it's interesting to note that a bit later on that it was told the people with him heard a sound, but they didn't hear what was said. This was something that was personal to Saul, spoken specifically to him. And sometimes God speaks to us directly, speaks to us individually. Sometimes he speaks to groups. But this was a personal conversation with Saul. And he heard this voice that said, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? To which Saul responds, who are you, Lord? And the Lord responds, I am Jesus, who you are persecuting. so clear and so direct. Saul had asked the question, and in the rabbinic teaching, which he was familiar with, such an occurrence would be understood to be the voice of God himself. And so Saul, even though he was persecuting the church, recognized that this was special. This was something from heaven. And that voice that said, when Saul said, "Who are you, Lord?" It was Jesus himself. It was Jesus that Saul was persecuting. He might have been going round dealing with individuals, human beings, doing things to them, but it affects Jesus. Any persecution of the church and of God streaks directly and hits Jesus personally. He feels every part of it, and he's there with each one of us and all those who suffer and all those who are persecuted. And this encounter with Jesus changed Saul's life forever. Initially, we are told that when he got up, he opened his eyes, but he couldn't see. He couldn't see. And he had to be led by the hand. He had to be led by the hand to Damascus. And for 3 days, what probably seemed 3 very long days, he was in Damascus. And because of all that had happened and the impact on his life, sometimes when things happen, I don't know if it happens to you, I mean, it surprisingly happens to me, you don't feel like eating. You don't feel like drinking. And he didn't eat or drink for 3 days as he was there. But God always has things in hand, and he was working on the next part of his plan. And he did it by visiting a man called Ananias, who was a disciple. And we've had read to us the conversation that God had with Ananias in verses 10 to 16. And not surprisingly, Ananias was a bit wary about going to see Saul, because even though they didn't have much means of communication, news had travelled. And he was aware of who Saul was. And it was almost, "You want me to go and see him, Lord? I think I'd rather give him a bit of a wide berth." His reputation had preceded him. Ananias could be walking into a trap. But God assures Ananias that not only is Saul aware that he will come, that Ananias will come to visit him, but that he will restore his sight as well. And how did Saul know that? Because he'd been praying. And while he'd been praying, God had visited him in a vision and told him that this man Ananias would come and that he would receive his sight back. And again, because of Saul's religiosity, he would have no doubt prayed formally. I imagine through his life, he would have prayed and he would have done things and he would have said things to God. But now it seems that he isn't just saying prayers, he is praying. Because of this encounter with Jesus, he is now praying. He's seeking God. He wants to know what's happening. He wants to know what's going on. Saul is aware that Ananias will come and that he will restore his sight. But more than that, God tells Ananias, Saul is a chosen instrument, somebody who will carry God's name to the Gentiles, to their kings, and to the people of Israel. I don't know whether any of us can actually put ourselves in Ananias's shoes, or sandals, should I say. If we were asked to go and visit somebody who we knew had come to your town or city specifically looking for people like you to do you harm, and God says, "Well, go and find them before they come to you, because I've got something I want you to do for them." I don't know how keen we would be to actually go. And Ananias does take some convincing. But it seems that the uncertainty disappears because he has confidence in God. and confidence in what God has told him to do, and he's prepared to go. And not only that, but when he enters the house, when he goes into the house where Saul is, he refers to Saul as his brother, brother Saul. It seems that Ananias had really accepted what God had told him about what had happened to Saul. And as he prays for Saul, something like scales fall from his eyes and he can see again. And even though he hasn't eaten for 3 days, the first thing we read that happens is he's baptized. He's baptized and then after that given something to eat. Something to eat, and his strength is restored. And here in this account we have two men. One setting out to do as much damage as possible. To do as much damage to people who followed God. But then he encountered Jesus and his life is totally transformed. The other, Ananias, this is the only mention of Ananias in the Bible other than in Acts 22 when Paul, as he's become, is speaking to people in Jerusalem and recounting his conversion, and he mentions Ananias. So, as far as I'm aware, those are the only two mentions of Ananias in the Bible. Yet, what an impact he had. He may have only had this one thing publicly to do. He was no doubt a faithful follower of Jesus, but we are only told of this one act. But how significant it is. He was part of setting Saul on the way to becoming the person he was, used by God to spread the word, to become probably the most significant person in the early church, as he taught and as he travelled on his missionary journeys to taking the message to a number of places. Would this have happened? Would God have found another way if Ananias had said no? If Ananias had not been prepared? And again, we don't know how significant the things are that we do when we feel it's something God's laid on our heart. We may not see any outcome, we may not see any result. You think of missionaries and people who've worked for years, but after their death things have happened and things have gone on. They've planted the seeds. We don't know. But as we started this morning with a couple of minutes silence for the Queen, much has been said of her faith in God, seeing herself as a servant of this country, of the Commonwealth, trying to live a life of faithfulness to God. We sang about Jesus being the servant king. His life was a life of service. He showed us the way. And as it says in that song, let us learn how to serve. And in our lives enthrone him. Each other needs to prefer, for it is Christ we're serving. It's another song that comes to mind that just says, it's not about me. As if you should do things my way. You alone are God, and I surrender to your ways. We just need to be in God's will and in his purposes. And it doesn't matter how insignificant something might be or how important we might think it is. If God's asked us to do it, it is important. And we need to get it done. As Jesus said, whoever gives a cup of cold water in my name. It doesn't have to be a big thing, but it could be very important. The Queen was an example of service, being single-minded in her duty to serve this country. But much more than that, Jesus was an example, how he was prepared to leave his place in glory and come to this earth with the restrictions of a human being and live and show us the way that we should live. Before dying on the cross and overcoming sin and death and Satan, so that we might have life and have it in all its fullness, as he says in John 10, verse 10. How we must treat one another. It says to treat one another as we'd like to be treated. How often in our lives have we not done that? If people treated us in the way we've treated others, how hurtful it would be. Being followers of Jesus is to be a servant, to think of others, to be obedient in every way. We sang, "Will you come and follow me if I but call your name?" Will we be obedient like Ananias, being prepared even to go into potentially dangerous situations? I think I told you about listening to a minister talking who worked in downtown Chicago. And he said that he had somebody who was working with him, and he said they had to go and see this person. And they went, and they went down some alleys, and they went into the room, and they saw him, and they came out. And as they left and got out on the road, he noticed the person with him was shaking. And he said, "What's wrong with you?" And he said, "What do you mean, what's wrong with me?" He said, "Didn't you see those people down the alleys with their guns protecting the room we've been in and the people doing that?" And he said, "Well, you know, I was just focused on God had told me to go and see this man and I went." We need to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. He may not ask us to do something like that. It might be dangerous enough to go and see our neighbour or to talk to somebody else. But we need to make sure that we're obedient, that we do what God asks us to do, not what he asks somebody else to do, even here in Biddeford, not what he asks another church to do, but what he asks us to do. But we need to have ears that will hear. Ananias was in that position to hear from God. Saul was getting in that position where he was understanding what God wanted from him. We long, well I hope we do, to see God's kingdom come. For him to come and to set his rule here on earth, in Biddeford, in the surrounding areas and beyond. That will be helped if we are all obedient to him. And respond to him in whatever way he asks us to serve him and to serve others. We sing, "Build your kingdom here."